and makes a speech, he always starts with a joke. And when an African makes a speech, there's an apology. So late. So I'm an African. Obviously, that note, we will try and improve in terms of our timekeeping. We sincerely apologize. The agenda you have must be reflecting two items. But let me indicate that the agenda will be as follows. Opening and welcome. Those are the standard items of the agenda. Opening and welcome. Apologies. Minutes. Metaphorizing. And then there will be further deliberations on the annual report of the department and of the Ngonyama Trust. And there will be an item on the consideration on the BRRR report. And then there will be announcements if that at the end of the closure. Any additions? I take it that is adopted as read. Silence will mean consent. So I therefore take this opportunity to welcome you, and without wasting much time, to also appreciate and welcome the presence of the department, the district minister, the DG, and all your staff who accompanied you. And yourself, honorable members, and the committee staff, you are most welcome. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, sir. Good morning, members. Good morning, colleagues. Apologies are from Ms. Wenyamabila is coming late. Mr. Ndapani is attending the Sheffield's Forum. Babu Trikulu is extending his apology, and Babu Zulu because of his sickness. Thank you very much. And the minister's apology as well. Thank you.
The apologies are noted. But having read the apology, I must also state for the record that the meeting is in order. We don't constitute a quorum. There are two sets of minutes quickly before us. There's one set of minutes which is not here, the minutes of the 17th. We will deal with that set of minutes in the next meeting. The meeting of the 8th of October. Page 2. Page 3. Look at the minutes of the 15th of October. 8-1.
Honourable Madam. Chairperson, although I had submitted an apology for that day, I actually did attend. I've marked it as apologies.
Oh, you did attend?
I did attend that day.
So correct it. Page 2. Approved. Madam Mandela.
daughter not the minister?
Over on the island second. The minutes approved. Thank you. Again, for the record, on the 8th, the Deputy Minister was present, and her name is not appearing. The meeting will be corrected accordingly. Are there any matters arising from the minutes? No matter arising. Thank you very much. We will proceed. We'll now deal with further deliberations on the annual report of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform in Guayama Trust. The Department of Rural in the presentation. Thank you very much. Sorry for the inconvenience, yes.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much. Honourable members, Deputy Minister and colleagues, we have a long list of items from the committee. We will be guided by the committee. The committee requested, among others, a report on recapitalization and development. Now, whether the committee wants us to present that or leave a presentation for the committee's information will be guided by the committee, but there is a presentation. We were requested for a report on the work of the Land Rights Management Committee. Again, we will be guided by the committee on whether that must be a presentation. We were further requested to provide a report on the progress report of the implementation of the Comprehensive Rural Development Program. At the last sitting of the committee, when we were presenting the annual report, we circulated a thick report to the honorable members last week. That was the detailed CRDP progress report. Again, we'll be guided by members whether that report will be presented. We were further requested, on top of the CRDP report, we also have separated a report on outcome number 7, what has been the progress on the implementation of outcome number 7 since 2010 to date. Then the report on state land audit. There is a presentation, there is a report, and the presentation on the progress of the implementation of the Special Planning and Land Use Management Bill. So, Chair, we really seek your guidance. I think there are five reports and five presentations.
Maliji, you know, I understand your frustration, maybe, if I may use that word. Maybe not. You are frustrated. Okay, I understand your guidance seeking comment. And I must also indicate that maybe from my side, we are not very clear as to what we expect from the department, the presentation from the department. Because indeed, those presentations were made. I think what we want to achieve from this meeting really is if you can just to out of the presentation that we gave, and I'm sure you can be able to do that, just to elevate issues which maybe are challenges and issues which you think you have performed well and you continue to perform well, you are improving, without going into the details of the report. The reason why we need that information by and large, of course, is to be able to compile our own report in terms of the BRRR as Parliament. So we believe that that information would be of assistance to us. I must also ask the content advisor here to make a comment as to whether they had any other reason that I may not have mentioned that they would expect from the department, whether they have some expectations which they may have out of the department in relation to these kind of presentations.
Thanks. Good morning, honorable members, deputy minister and colleagues. I think from our meeting, Chair, we remember that one of the issues that EMA, I'm talking about the management committee meeting, but the issue around the farm workers issues, which when you look at the annual report presented, doesn't go into detail around, actually, it doesn't be much around those issues. So hence, the work of the land rights management facility was identified that the department can come and present the report on those issues. So it was a request that the department will actually provide a bit of detail around, you know, the cases that they are handling, the status on those the cases. So I think that's one of the priority issues. And the idea around selecting or putting those key issues was that when the report of the committee goes, it should actually not only talk about the numbers, but give a bit of detail in terms of the actual work that the committee is doing. Secondly, the committee previously did have some engagement around the land audit, but those questions seems to be all the time coming. And the idea was that the committee must have space to receive a detailed report and perhaps a summarized presentation around those issues so that the committee will then apply in its mind and perhaps if necessary put a particular recommendation on that. And the report around the Special Land Use and Management Act is basically around understanding the kind of work that the department is doing in supporting municipalities when the committee passed that particular piece of legislation. The committee heard about a lot of work that the department is doing. So if the committee is not getting those kind of details, sometimes it actually underreports, whereas there are a whole lot of issues and achievements. I mean, it is the intention of the committee to make sure that in the report that it puts, it actually elevates all the successes. It also shows the weaknesses and challenges that the department is experiencing. So all of this should enable the committee to put down particular recommendations with regard to the budget of the department.
Thank you very much.
Yes, interesting. I think perhaps let me start by saying I think there are two reports which will leave for information for the support team of the committee to look at. That is outcomes, and then that will bring the detail in addition to the CRDP report that was circulated last year. So that is a complementary detail. But I can ask the DGs responsible for these areas to provide that the synopsis in the form. I know that I've got, for instance, for this plan, a very comprehensive report, but from what has been said, I think I would ask Sandy Ogunrombi to provide detail. I mean, that's a high-level summary, but pointing to the actual work and the value add in relation to what the department does in support of municipalities. The Chief Surveyor General will do the same thing on this plume. Let me ask Mr. Matlango on the land rights management facility there to kickstart. And then we will be followed by Mr. Ogunrombi and then the Chief Surveyor General.
Mr. Matlango.
Thanks, members, Mr. General.
The system is not working there.
I need to use my iPod.
Oh, can you hear? Yes. Okay. Oh yeah. It's not rally, sir.
You may proceed, sir. Okay, yeah. So I think I'm not sure if this has been an error. I wanted to say recap and development is the land rights management. So both.
Both have been identified, sir.
Oh, okay. We will reflect the recap with your permission, Chair and DG, and then I will talk verbally on the land rights management facility because we didn't prepare any presentation. But we have a presentation on the recap and development. The recapitalization and development program is a program that was initiated by the department in 2009. This follows a series and a request taking stock of the land reform projects across the country that were redistributed or resituated since 1994. The first slide talks basically to that background. We had consultants who were appointed that went to visit almost each and every property and give us a feedback. The feedback was mainly given us kind of a robot where they told us that some of your projects are at which they need serious assistance, they are collapsing. Some are EMA, which are, you know, they're in between collapsing or being productive, and some were found to be green, which they are productive. Then we took a decision to say that because in the budget of the department we had only an item called land acquisition, we introduced 25% of the set aside to assist all those affected properties across the country. Due to limited resources, we had to, in our strategic plan, identify a certain number for the MTA period that can be assisted, and some will fall into place and will fall into the system as we go along. I'll ask the topic just to go to the next slide. The next slide talks to the strategic objectives of land reform. We'll skip that and go to the next slide. In the Then this is also the background and the money that they spend so far. I'll remain on this slide here because the specific request talk to the breakdown of the number of projects in all the provinces. Here, as at 31st of March, when we close our books, we had 1,351 of those projects. Members, you can see the breakdown per province, with Mpumalanga, with the Northwest and Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, Eastern Cape leading. Then there was also a specific question to say how many strategic partners are involved here. We also provide a breakdown per province. You will see Western Cape, it's 9, it's the smallest. The specific reason there is that you've got a very close market which is around grains and table grains. So a few people take our projects. And then the number of hectares that are affected by this, you will go back to what the government has redistributed. We know that we're talking plus 7 million so far. We are trying our best to make strides. Out of those projects that are identified, 1.1 million hectares have been covered. So the last column shows the budget spend. It's 2.14 billion. It just tells you how expensive it is to assist a minimum 1.1 million hectares. So RICAP basically is more expensive than land acquisition itself, which means that by buying a property, you basically need thrice the amount to assist that property to be in full production. That's the scenario that we have. That is important. And I just wanted to touch on challenges. I remember in the last meeting, members made example about in certain instances where strategic partners are running the show without the involvement of the beneficiaries themselves. I've listed a few number of challenges that we have encountered. Please remember, members, that in 2009 when we started, this was basically a pilot. It has only been formalized fully this year. What were the challenges? What are the challenges is that there's over expenditure without approval, whereby the strategic partner and the beneficiaries basically will ignore the business plan and then just do buying of goods and services without the approval of the department. In some instances, you will find that the circumstances that they find themselves, because you approve the business plan today, in a month's time, price has changed and all the stuff. Then they will also deviate without consulting the department, which becomes a problem. And in some cases, because emergencies, will pay in advance, but later we don't get the value for the services, then we have to terminate the contracts. Or some of them, they will overinflate their business plan, and then later they under-expand because they've already inflated their business plan. We catch up with them. And then cross-subsidization, in most of the instances, a strategic partner will be given more than one project. And then if he has done with one particular project, instead of giving the department the refund, he will take the money and use it in another project, next project. Failure to adhere to business plan, failure to account to the funds release. In some of the instances, you don't get the invoices, and then not to pursue the strategic partner and the beneficiaries to say, but you can't approve where we don't have invoices. Failure to remediate breach. There are cross specific clauses in the contracts that from time to time they breach them and then we have to come in and correct them. And then some of them, they basically fail to meet the deliverables expected. For instance, you will expect a certain yield in a crop or a farm and then they won't reach that because they will maybe underestimate fertilizers and all the other stuff. Fail to provide training. This is one of the issues that came strongly from the members to say, you usually find the beneficiaries being spectators. As the service partners themselves, they do the farming on behalf of the beneficiaries. We look into this and then in some instances we come up with corrective measures because at the end of the day, you need to transfer the skills to the beneficiaries so that there's no reliance on the strategic partner in future, especially during the exit period of 3 years or 5 years. This continues. It's just a failure to purchase quality livestock. In most of the instances with livestock and members, what the strategic partners will do, will go in our very same communities and collect marginal cows and then give it to the beneficiaries. And then when we take stock or send agriculture, we find that they were just going around just collecting cattle of the marginal quality and put it in our farms. And then we cut down on those things. The SPs themselves, they collude with the beneficiaries and then misuse. In some instances, you find out if you look at the invoices that they send to the department are not of genuine, and then we ask questions and then also put the beneficiaries on the spotlight. If you look at the end, towards the end, it's basically some procurement procedures that are linked to the contract and the poor workmanship that are done. We look into the estate, for instance, we find that the windmill they buy from the, they choose the cheapest good meat that you can find in the market. Not that you must buy the expensive one, but there are certain standards by SABS that needs to be followed so that there is a certain large span of a win-win. For instance, I'm just making an example. And again, failure of the transfer of skills was one of the issues that came up heavily. I've also prepared some small leaflets, members, just to distribute amongst yourself so that you get to the gist of the core objectives of recap and development, and then maybe next time we can talk about it. Thanks, members. That covers the recapitalization and development. Then, Chair, the next one, which is the performance on the land rights management facility 2011-12-2013. I will ask the permission of the chair just to get. I ask the office to email me the information I don't have with here, so that by the end, then I distribute that one as well, because it's more of figures and numbers they provide. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. Can we get next, Mr. Malam?
Chairperson, are you going to permit commentary or questions on that presentation?
Can we take the next one quickly and then we can combine them? Thank you. Are you ready with the next one?
Oh, okay.
Mr. Riba.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, all. I think mine is going to be short, Chair. Firstly, before I get into the presentation, I just want to inform the committee that this the report on land audit was approved by Cabinet in September, and we have booklets that have been circulated around on the land audits. the project started in 2011 and then we completed March 2013 with a bit of...
It does not have the Deputy Minister.
So the booklets basically summarize the outcome of the exercise that was conducted. if we can go to in 2010, the department as custodians of Carousel Information initiated the land audit project. The audit was conducted for state-owned land that is registered in the deed office, and it was desktop analysis of private land ownership. the purpose of the audit of registered state land was to determine how much land is owned by state and what is it used for and who are the occupants. So this included all spheres of government, former homelands, public land, Ngonyama Trust, land, state-owned enterprises. And the exercise included surveyed land, not registered. In terms of private land audit, we wanted to determine ownership in terms of gender, race, nationality, percentage of shares, marital status, and living status. This table shows the distribution of registered state land per province. all in all, we had 17 million hectares of state land, and the second column just shows the number of land parcels. All of that is included in the booklet. state land parcels category, you had land that is used by government entity, municipalities, national departments, provincial departments, and that land that was classified. Next slide. And in terms of land use, this is what we discovered. For instance, agriculture and fisheries, 4 million hectares of land is used for that. Commercial, 1.2 million. We also had residential, 3.4 million hectares. Most of the residential were your RDP houses that have not yet been transferred to beneficiaries. But obviously, the process is ongoing, so those numbers change with time. And this shows the users. You have government departments, organizations, municipalities, private persons, public entities, traditional authorities. And in terms of private ownership, you have individuals, individual citizens occupying or owning 46 million hectares, companies, 21 trusts, 25 private organizations, 2.6. This is just the distribution of individuals in provinces, male and female. That's the distribution. You see, males own more. And this one just shows the distribution of state land versus private in each and every province, and then, and land that was not accounted for, which includes land that was surveyed but not registered. An example is your Eastern Cape, the bulk of it, your former Transkei, was not surveyed, so it was not registered at its office. But we have seen surveyed about 3.8 to 9 million hectares. So those numbers will change when registration takes place. Again, Limpopo, you have Kruger National Park, another part of Kruger National Park which was not surveyed, but we have since have a diagram for that, but it's not yet registered. So those numbers will change. This is just a graph showing, you know, the previous slide. Again, this slide also shows, you know, just giving it a better picture than just numbers in columns. These are your private sectional titles, your so-called townhouses, distribution of them per province. In total, we have 59,356 sectional scheme in the country, and that costed 853,694 sectional units, like a townhouse or a flat. And thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Riva. That one on special planning and land use planning. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Good morning, honourable members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I will not be able to certainly go through this whole thing.
Can you have your name, sir?
Ogonrombi, Sunday for short. Sunday and Sunday, Monday.
In your language, whether?
That would be my sir.
Okay. Sunday?
Yeah.
Very cold that day. Do you mind?
Absolutely fine. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah. The three parts to this presentation, we have attempted to give a brief background of the processes that led to the finalization of the bill into an Act of Parliament. The other part relates to the work we are doing at the moment in seeking to implement the piece of legislation assigned by the President,
And the third part of the presentation relates to the specific request around the support we give to municipalities. So if I can just run through the presentation without dealing with the details. Also, please give me the next slide, please. The next one. Yeah. The Special Planning and Land Use Management Act 16 of 2003 is probably the first single national legislation for the entire country on this subject. The next slide. Please continue. This slide, Chairperson, will attempt to show what exactly the structure of the legislation, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act, which we call SPLUMA. It's a framework legislation of planning. There are five development principles in this piece of legislation. It seeks to coordinate and put together all these activities as they happen on land, as they happen in space, in the special development planning system and framework. There are four frameworks in the legislation. The National Special Development Framework, it's exactly the same as proposed in Chapter 8 of the National Development Plan. We've got a Provincial Special Development Framework. We have a possibility of a Regional Special Development Framework, and then a Municipal Special Development Framework. Particularly the Municipal Special Development Framework must then be translated into a land use management system, particularly through land use schemes, and that's Chapter 5 of the legislation. And on day-to-day land management, we have a land development management system, which at the center of it is a municipal plan transfer system. And then there are other general provisions as in the legislation. But this slide attempts to just give a high-level summary of the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act. Next slide. In terms of content of the legislation, as I said, there are development principles. The minister is empowered to make norms and standards. There is a chapter that deals with intergovernmental support. Because of the nature of planning, almost everything we do takes place on land. So it has a focus on also intergovernmental support. The minister ensuring that municipalities and provinces do all the things that this legislation says they should do. I've already referred to the special development frameworks as the key special planning instrument in the legislation. Land use schemes will be made by all municipalities to record what the land will be used for. We have municipal planning tribunals as the key institution for dealing with land applications. And then there is a provision that allows the minister in national interest to either join in an application or to call in for a determination, an application that is before a municipality. Before the minister exercises that power, he has to publish some criteria. Next slide, please. Chair, honourable members, this slide is an attempt to just go back a little bit to say that this bill was formally introduced in the National Assembly in 2012. We attempted to first go to NGO people, we then came back here. We were before this honourable committee. We had a lengthy session from between July and the early part of this year. We had public hearings on 2 days specifically. There were formal submissions and oral presentations to the committee. There were 13 amendments that were considered by this committee to the bill before it was passed. There was a referral to senior counsel for some of the issues raised in the bill. And then the bill was finally adopted by the National Assembly in February 2013, and we indeed remain grateful for the good work the committee did in processing that piece of legislation. Before it was then referred to the NCOP. Shortly before it got to the NCOP, we attempted to go around the country again to sensitize people about what version the National Assembly had passed. We had some workshops across the country. Next slide, please. And then the NCOP, it formally got to the NCOP. We briefed them for the first time in April 2013. They also had to table it before each of the 9 provincial legislatures. As a department, we supported that process across the country. Those days are there when we did that. The NCOP formally passed the bill in June 2013. Next slide, please. The bill was then signed by the President on the 2nd of August. It was formally gazetted as an Act of Parliament on the 5th of August 2013. In terms of implementation, as a department, we prepared what we call an implementation and change management plan. In terms of this plan, because the bill expects each and every municipality to implement. It is not one of those that we can selectively implement in 1 or 2 areas. So we prepared this implementation and change management plan. We've also created such structures. At national level, we've got a national SPLUMA implementation forum where all provinces are represented, and some key national departments are also there. we've had at least two formal meetings of the National Special National School Mine Implementation Workshop. We also do have at each within each province a technical implementation forum, and they already started many of the provinces. Next slide, please. Chairperson started with going to all the municipalities, because as we said, it is a piece of legislation that must be implemented by all the municipalities in the country. It's not optional. And these are some of the dates where we have engaged. We've had more engagement than that. And currently, we are fortunate that the South African Local Government Association, they are also across the country having what we call the Provincial Members Assembly and the National Members Assembly. We have requested slots to also brief the politicians, because it is not just a piece of legislation that officials and municipalities must implement. The council, the councillors, the mayors, they must all know what this legislation expects of them. So we're using those forums. We hopefully will get the slot. DG has been invited to the final National Members Assembly of Southern Cape Town in the end of November. I'll be using that. Presently, we have some tentative date for the Pluma Implementation National Coordinating Forum for next year, which we want to present in November to all the provinces, so that we have regular dates that we meet throughout next year. The working groups and the implementation forums are also meeting. We then decided that we should design what we call a municipal readiness assessment template. That template is quite comprehensive. It is a template that each and every municipality must complete before we can design an implementation plan per municipality. We've sent it to all the municipalities. We've issued a cover letter to that. We are working night and day to ensure that the regulations to this PLUMA is finalized in this month of October, and hopefully if we can do something this weekend. In terms of the legislation, we must also bring the regulations to Parliament. So hopefully if we finish this weekend, we want to bring that regulations to yourself, because we've had to amend. The legislation hasn't been passed. We have not appointed commencement date. One of the things we're saying is to have standard implementation. There are some sections we can bring into operation almost immediately. We've already presented that to all the municipalities and the provinces. It's also required that we need to facilitate training, and we hope that next year we'll intensify efforts to ensure that whoever has responsibilities in terms of this legislation must be well trained to be able to do what it's meant to do. Next slide, please. This is just a quick summary. I don't think I need to say anything about it. It's actually one page if I was restricted to 2 minutes. But the one thing that is worth saying is that even though this is a framework legislation, we expect that each of the provinces will make supplementary legislation. In terms of Section 10 of the legislation, our provinces must make those supplementary legislation. There have been quite some tensions around the power of national vis-a-vis provinces and vis-a-vis municipalities. There have been quite a number of cases in court. We continue to navigate through that storm to ensure that we do all what is right. Even after President signed, there have been some judgments. We're still expecting 2 judgments from the Constitutional Court on some of the issues that remain contentious in terms of the legislation. Next slide, please. These are some of the sections. It's largely sections 1 to 32. Next slide. We think we can bring into operation right now, as well as section 55 to 60. But when we bring the regulations to this committee, we'll deal with those details. But these are the ones we think we can ask the president to actually put in operation almost immediately. Next slide, please. The questions have been asked about the provincial legislation. We're happy to report that all the 9 provinces are now revising. Those who have got legislation, they are revising their legislation to conform to the national one. We're also saying that municipalities have a right to make bylaws, where we're helping with this coordinated forum to ensure we engage with some of those issues. Next slide. The case management process, I think this is at the core of our effort. I think there are two types of situations we find ourselves, Chairperson, Honourable Members. It's the reality that when you get to many of the metropolitan municipalities, many of them are very competent, many of them indeed have structures in place to do land development management, to do special plans, to do land use management. Many of our local municipalities, especially in the rural areas, they've never done this before. Even though they've never done this before, the Constitutional Court has said this is their mandate. So it is not a question of us saying as provincial or national that because we think we can do it better, we'll do it. It's a constitutional issue. Many of the cases in court continue to confirm that position that we need to put municipalities. Because of this reality that many of them have never done this before, we've had to spend some time developing this change management plan to look at what are the key drivers in terms of implementation, in terms of powers and functions, and roles and responsibility, especially that of support and monitoring by national and provincial. I will not dwell on this, but this is a framework that informs our change management plan to say, where do we identify those changes, what are those activities that we need to look at, communication plan, training plan, including a resistance plan, in case of those who just feel that we want to continue to do the way it's been done for the past 60 years. And these are the things that we're saying will go into a change management plan. And this is the organizational structure. I've already spoken to this about the work groups and the kind of structure we put in place. We also have working groups, and these are the four working groups that we're using to drive the implementation of the legislation. Next slide, please. I think in terms of provinces, we've also ensured that provinces are together with us in speaking to municipalities, in all our provincial implementation teams. We've had provincial departments sitting and leading, especially the Office of the Premier and the provincial department responsible for cooperative governance and the kind of things. We've also presented actually to the MIMEC of a cooperative governance, and they've been quite supportive in sending the message to municipalities that it is important for them to get ready to implement this legislation. Next slide. I think the primary people affected by this legislation is municipalities. We're looking at the organizational structures for this kind of work. They need to review some of their legal documents at the moment. They need to review their systems. We're even saying that in terms of issues, some of them have never budgeted for the kind of functions. They don't have human resources. We need to align their processes. There are some of these procedural issues that we have to deal with. And these are the things we're dealing with in terms of the template, in terms of the physical. Right now, in about six provinces, people are beginning even today as we sit here. Next slide. The next three slides practically give a sense that from our perspective, organizationally, your big metros and your big locals should at least have this kind of structure in place. They must have a unit to do special planning, they must have a GIS unit, they must be able to receive applications, they must have a legal support, they must have land use management support. And these are the kind of things. There is a process for appeals. We've done this, we've presented it to them, but we're saying that organizationally this is what a metro should have in the minimum. Next one. The model C, we've also had a model B to say some other locals that are big but not too small, they can have this kind of thing. It's a reduced version, and this would say we'll implement the legislation. Next slide. And your very rural municipalities, there's one unique thing about this legislation. What we're saying is that if a municipality does not have the capacity to do it, especially when it comes to land development management, it could agree with another municipality. Two or more municipalities may actually join resources together to set up the institutions. We are proposing the ideas of shared climate center so that each municipality doesn't have to create new institutions. They can join, they can be council resolutions that will assist them, especially your low capacity municipality. So we've created a very scalable structure in some of the very, very rural or very small municipalities. Next slide. The template that we've made for the municipalities in order to gauge their readiness for implementation looks like this. It's a bigger document, it's an Excel spreadsheet, or I just copied about two of them to give a sense of what the municipalities need to engage with if they want to assess their own readiness, and we're doing this with them. Next slide. There are quite a number of questions. We've asked so many questions that if we get answers to this, we'll assist us working with the municipalities to design what we call a change management plan for those municipalities. Next slide. This is the template. It just gives a sense of what we expect of each municipality, their name, and those kind of things. Action required, which section of the law, who has the responsibility to do it, who is delegated to perform the action, this when we expected it to be implemented, targeted when it's actually achieved, and it can comment the explanatory notes that that accompanies the template. Lastly, it just reaffirms that SOMAD deals largely with land use, not land ownership. It produces some strategic and practical instruments available to all of us on how best we can use land. It ensures that we develop these instruments, we use them, and we change land uses only in a very transparent and inclusive manner. I think what is unique about the legislation, which we also got guided by this committee especially, is the fact that now we must plan for the whole of our areas. We cannot exclude areas of the traditional leadership. We cannot exclude areas that are informal. We cannot exclude all those areas that previously, when you look at many of our town planning schemes, they only apply to your towns and your old white town and nothing else. So I think that's what one of the transformative things the bill is, the legislation is talking to. The next part, next slide. The next part actually talks to the support presently that we're doing to implement this legislation and also supporting municipalities. So I've just listed some of these national projects, the ambitions that are there. We're supporting 7 provinces now in developing their legislation. because I liked it from this year's plan. Next slide. These are some of the policy work that we're doing and some of the practical work we're doing. I don't want to go through each of them. The next one, the next few ones just give in terms of special plans that we're doing in municipalities across the country and in each of the 9 provinces. Some of them are national projects because they straddle the entire country. But when it comes to, there are 3 aspects to it. Is that we're supporting a special development framework of a municipality, or the land use management system, like the land use scheme of that municipality, or precinct plan, which is more of a detailed planning of specific areas within the municipality. And this is, these are the figures we're giving in all the 9 provinces, and we've been doing that for quite some years. In terms of the past 3 years, DG, Chairperson colleagues, we have about 106 exits that we either currently finalizing or doing, about 21 land use schemes, about 51 precedents. They all come to about 78. In terms of the practical question that we've been, the committee has requested that we respond to. Next slide, I think that will be all on our side. Thank you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sunday. We received 3 presentations, one on the CAP, one on the audit, and the one on the RUMA. Are there any comments? Please just indicate which slide you're referring to when you raise your comment or your question. Madam Onuswate Onukawa, in order. Sorry, ma'am. Can you switch that to my office? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a question, a couple of questions on each one. My first one goes to the VCAP and development program presentation. And not a specific slide, but in the presentation, the gentleman presenting, and I'm sorry I didn't catch his name,
Mr. Maslangu,
you spoke about the robot system that you had for every land reform project, and you rated them red, amber, or green, depending on their current status. I think it would be helpful to going forward, see the number of projects in each category, by province maybe, so that we can get a feel of where the problem areas are and how many there are. That's the first point. The second goes to the fact that the RECAP development program is only really addressing about 20% of the projects at the moment. And my question is, what are we doing for the rest in terms of what support are we providing post-settlement? I'm not talking about financial support, but other support. What are we doing to assist them in other ways? And then my last question is, you on slide, which was one of our challenges for strategic partners and mentors, I think, first of all, we need to get an idea of how many of these strategic partners and or mentors are problematic, because I certainly don't believe it's all of them. But is it the majority? Is it 10%, 15%, 20%? I don't know. That's the first part of the problem. The second is, what oversight is the department conducting? What monitoring and evaluation is the department conducting of these strategic partners and mentors? What reporting mechanisms do you have in place to get them to say, this is what we've done, this is what we've spent the money on, this is how we're assisting on a quarterly or biannual basis? So that's the recap and development. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the land audit presentation, I have a concern with regard to slide 7 and 9 in particular. And here, we're talking about the land user on a national basis. This is state land that we're talking about. And yet we've got 3.6 million hectares, or 17.8% of state-owned land that we don't know who the user is. It's categorized as unknown. There's also a major discrepancy between slide 9 and slide 7, where, to give you an example, slide 7 talks about state land parcels category national, and it identifies, for example, municipality as having 58,856 parcels, or 2.1 million hectares. On slide 9, we say that municipalities have 3.9 million hectares. Now that's a big difference. That's 1.8 million hectares difference between two slides. And I'd appreciate some clarity in that regard from Mr. Heber. Then lastly, Chairperson, with regard to SPUMA. This is just a very straightforward question. I'm not going to try it, Mr. Sunday. With regard to the capacity of rural municipalities, I agree with you wholeheartedly that the rural municipalities lack the capacity to implement SPUMA in the way it should be implemented. I am concerned that we are creating another level of bureaucracy by saying that municipalities can combine as a shared service centre. Surely it would be more practical to do that through district municipalities, which already have resources, facilities, and skills, and combine it at a district level. Thank you, Chairperson. That's the extent of my questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues, and good morning, everyone. My first one, I'll start with the recapitalization, especially on slide number 5 and number 6, but I'll start with slide number 5. With regard to the billions that Masanga it actually, the money that has been spent there, it actually triple what they were actually anticipating. So I just want to find out, before they come up with this budget, did they actually look at what is happening on the ground so that they can have the estimated budget on that one, rather than just saying that we will just see when we start implementing the program on the ground. So it talks of billions of rand. So I just want to know if they ever have done a fetch before they start implementing that program. And on slide number 6, they actually here indicating on the challenges. They talk of over expenditure without approval. So I just want to know as to whether if they've got this kind of expenditure without approval, does that mean that they were just giving them a lot of money without actually giving limitation to a certain to a budget? Because if they were doing that, that's why maybe these people are actually use a lot. And I also want to know the action taken on those challenges. And then another issue is with regard to the training or transfer of skills. I just want to know how many people actually were actually given skills, and where are those who actually were skill transferred to them? Can they actually stand on their own to utilize the skills that is transferred to them? So those are two questions in terms of the capitalization. And now I will move to, because my colleague has covered me on the land audit, and then I will move to SPUMA. On the SPUMA issue, I want to find out regarding the budget. Because you actually indicated here that there will be training and in various municipalities or various government levels. I just want to know the funding. Who's actually funding that? Is the money coming from the department, or are you actually asking municipality to utilize their money? And also, have you, because here you, my colleague has questioned the issue of the district municipality, because it is not indicated here. It is only talking of metros and also talking of local municipalities. So I just want to know if that is also funded, because sometimes you might find that certain municipalities, they don't have resources to actually implement Yeah, and also with regard to the municipality, are you going, is all municipality expected to have a specific office to deal with this implementation? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Let me firstly thank the presentation from the department. It's very informative to share. I'll start with the recap chairperson. In the recap chair, it shows that this department is working well. It's doing well for our people. When you see on page 4, the improvement of the department chairperson, my comment is to be on that, to say, no. Let's thank this department. It's not always that crashing things because we want to channel it to the wrong thing when they are in the right thing. They are in the right thing, this department is telling chairperson. They are improving a lot. I'll move from the recap to the audit, land audit. Chairperson, this is why I'm saying this department is doing well, because it's the first time us in South Africa know about the land audit. We were not, actually, our grandfathers, they were dying with not knowing about their land in South Africa. Now, we know about our land, how many we have, even every province. So, I'm crying about my province because we have only 2%. So now, what will happen to us in Gauteng province if we have only 2%? There's too much people here. If you can count people, our whole body, there are more than all of these provinces. But we have only 2% land. What will happen to us? I don't know what we can expand. What we can have something to expand this land to be bigger. To make sure that they will accommodate all of us in housing. The demarcation, man. You can demarcate that as level in Bombo, Northwest. Because you see that this thing, it's not us to be in frustrated, more frustrated, but too much people in housing, too much church, you know. People always going, they want to have to build their housing, but there is no land. Thank you,
I would also like to thank the presentation. And firstly, I think my questions are going to be firstly on the first presentation on the CAP. I think we need to find out from the department. After appointing strategic partners, what exactly do you do to monitor and assess their work? Because at the end of the day, not all of them is true, but some become a problem, most especially to the department. And what is it that you are putting in place to ensure that at least you are able to recoup the money that has been wasted by engaged strategic partners? But are you not in a position to screen them before you appoint them? I know it has been answered several times to say we now go to the beneficiaries and ask them to get their preferred strategic partners. But it also becomes a problem because at the end of the day, if they do that, they are not able to do a recheck of who is doing what. If these people were successful in their farming areas, because we find at the end of the day people that have failed being appointed as strategic partners, and then they end up failing even the projects that we want to recheck. And on the second one, it was mentioned about former Transkei land. I just want to establish, how soon can it be finalized so that we get to know the total peg that we have? Can we be in a position to do that in fast track? So the next time when we meet, we are able to say, no, we have done this so that we get it over and done with, and then focus on other issues. And my last one on Mr. Okorumbi. I want to establish, I think I'm able to pronounce your surname better than the others. I've been practicing it. I can call it Mr. Okorumbi.
Is she right?
No, I want to understand the situation where you find municipalities selling land privately, which becomes a zoning issue, and we end up saying they don't have capacity, this is what is happening, but how are they able to sell land to private individuals? And what intervention can be made by the department? Because if we have an audit of state land, then we end up having many privately owned land, and we are not able to determine how they go about it. It also creates a problem to the department, because at the end of the day, we'll end up with most state land being sold privately. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chris. Mine is just a small one. My colleague alluded to that one. It's on the strategic partners. My question is that is there no time frame that is set aside to say that you'll be a strategic partner for these 5 months, and then we'll assess you and the people, so that we should see that these skills at least are showing, you know, are transparent, are showing, rather than leaving a strategic partner for just an open period. When money is up, then you also fell up an infant, because there is no money. So just before I fell up an infant, can't we give the strategic partners, you know, just a time frame to say, within this 5 or 6 months, we expect 1, 2, 3 to be transferred to the owner. And the last one, I don't know in which, but it was mentioned, is about the Narisek. I'm just sitting here thinking that the introduction of the Narisek, most of the young people were from the 23 districts. Now, while sitting here, I'm just thinking, wouldn't we also be wise, if we can, in the funds, especially these funds that we will give support to, can we also identify 1 or 2 or 3 of the young people that can also be added to the NARISEC COP, so that you also could say, here is future, here is a future person that can be a farmer tomorrow or whatever. I forgot to mention about the issue of CPA department. Please, if you can improve to capacitate the CPA, because some of them, they don't know their position when they are dealing with CPA things. One guy tell us that they are not, remember when we were in the oversight in Limpopo, there were people who were crying about chiefs, to say they are just fighting with chiefs. Chiefs, they said they are creating a community within the community. So some men mentioned that them, they are not fighting with chiefs, but they are the political structure, which means it shows that CPAs, they are not capacitated enough to understand what their job within the community, not a political part structure. They are not political structure. If the department can improve on that to capacitate the CPAs, thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. To Mr. You know, Mr. Sunday, just one
small thing in the where you talk about timelines and activities for the pre-NCOP processes. You talk about the workshops, but I see on the first page of the workshop, the Northern Cape is missing. I'm not sure whether it's still coming or the workshop is not going to be held there. Just read this one thing, because I see in the next page, you've covered the whole province. Then the Mr. Masango, just on the issue of strategic partners and mentors, I think you've raised a number of challenges there, quite a number of challenges about these structures. Now I'm wondering whether at the end of the day, you have just, you know, dismissals or are there actions that can take? Because if you have a situation where sometimes money has been spent, people have sort of not carried out the obligation, they've left beneficiaries on their own, they violated the terms of the contract and so on, are there consequences? Or do you have to say, where you say, no, okay, they've violated the contract, therefore go. Because I don't see anywhere where you indicate some action that were taken against those who have seriously transgressed. So you can just comment on those ideas. I want to give you an opportunity to respond. I think you will arrange yourself. There are questions to, I think, the both of the audit as well as Fluma and HM. Over to you. Oh, Mr. Lima.
Thank you, Chair. On the question of slide 9 and 7, discrepancy, actually it's not a discrepancy. Slide 7 talks to the land that is registered in the name of the municipality. Slide 9 talks about the user. So you'd have an instance where a national department, I'll make an example, national department land is registered under Union of South Africa, but is used by municipality. So that's why you have this figure. Slide number 9 talks to the user. For instance, you'd have an RDP house which is still registered in the name of the state but as an occupant who has no title deed. So that's why you see those discrepancies. Actually, they're not discrepancies.
Just
follow
up, if I may.
Clarity that I just need. On slide 7, the total area is 17 million hectares. And on slide 9, it's 20 million hectares. So there's 3,
yes.
Million, there's 3 million hectares that kind of vanished.
No, it's not vanished. It's not vanished. You'd find a huge piece of land used for different things. For instance, you have a piece of land where you have a hospital and a police station, but they're not registered. They're in one piece of land and it's not subdivided. So when we classify that, would identify two users, subs and step. thanks for the compliment on the exercise. Yes, it's the first one in the country. And we're hoping to deal with the 8 million that is unaccounted for, as I said in our presentation. We're hoping soon we'll be able to deal with this, because in this office there are certain land parcels which in our digital information, they do not show the owner. So we are relying on a special, you know, database when you go to special deed, if it is a land parcel, there's no owner name. So some of it is going to be addressed when we fix those. And in terms of the last question on finalization of restoration of the surveyed state lands, I think the department, together with the Department of Public Works, Mr. Maslang will assist here, is currently busy with the vesting master plan, which basically talks to the registration and the vesting of land parcels. But in terms of what has been surveyed, we have the figures, we know that. The only thing that is left is the registration. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matangu. While Mr. Matangu is approaching the main way he's going to be speaking from, I did not see the delegation from the Iwanyama Trust, and I forgot to acknowledge them as a result. And I want to take the opportunity to apologize and to acknowledge their presence. The CEO, Mr. Bebe, you're welcome. But in the meantime, while he's speaking, just prepare your mind to provide. You remember in the last meeting there was something raised about the surplus? You can just update us in terms of how far you have gone with the department in terms of addressing it. And if you have any other matter that you want to share with us, must also do so. You will be having an opportunity to do so. Thank you. Mr. Matlam?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think I'm also in trouble. Maybe I must start by apologizing. In earlier when I was greeting, I could not recognize that DM is here. DM, I'm very sorry and good morning. Hope I still have a job. Honourable Chair and members, I'll try to go so now, just so that I address these questions in a form of farming. Let's start with the training one, where the member asked, once these farmers get training, are they able to spend on their own or what? The kind of training that is offered in most of the farm, it's on-farm and also is theoretically. Some of the theoretical, we call it soft skills, where we teach them bookkeeping and all the stuff. But on an on-farm, it's complicated, whereby in the morning, for instance, when we are dealing with the livestock, the beneficiary need to physically walk to where the livestock is, chase them a little bit, walk exactly where they were sleeping, feel the dung, look at the color of the dung, and be able to advise the veterinarian what intervention mechanism needed and all this stuff. So it's a very complex and rigorous training that they get. When you get to cropping, they go do a sampling, being taught on sampling how to look at the leaves, if the leaves are getting yellow or brown, what are the things that they need to expect, what kind of chemicals that they need to spray on the farm and all this. So it's rigorous. But at the end of the day, most of them, because you find that even before they became beneficiaries, they were screened, you find that they have a certain knowledge of farming. They are able to stand on their own after training, but it's something that most of the time you need to come and train them so that they don't lose that skill and they can also familiarize and update themselves with the changing environment in the farming industry. Yes, most of the members, they get to stand on their own. Then the first question was around the robot. On the redistribution and restitution, the study was done some years ago, which is it might be old, but what was recent at 2009 was mainly for plus properties, which we still have, and we are using that partly as an intervention mechanism. I want to link this with the question of the budget that they spent today to say, is this a triple budget if you look into it? And it's basically not triple as such, but the statistics talks to 2009 up until end of December. So this 2.14 billion is basically almost to date, which means it's not broken into the financial years. That is why you look at it as if it's triple a budget, but it's because it's to date up until December, not just in the financial years. But what happened, what informed this intervention, partly is that study that I spoke about, and also the business plan. Because one of the reasons for a mentor or a strategic partner is to go on the ground and tell us what is doable, what are the interventions that are needed. Obviously, we've got those 6 months because we work on season and the second cycle and all the stuff. They prepare that for us, and then we have the committees that screen that. We don't just accept what they're saying. We screen it, ask questions, look at the norm and standards. For instance, if you are saying in that particular area it's 9,000 per hectare to do maize, we call the commodity organization and say, in the Northern Cape or in the Western Cape, what does it cost per hectare? They will tell you whether it's vision land or whether it's the land that has already been in production, and then they will guide us. So based on that information, we also scrutinize this business plan and allocate the money appropriately. Now, follow up today to say over expenditure. Over expenditure here, we'll talk to, for instance, let me make sort of an example with the parking. They will go and deviate. Instead of buying 2 liter diesel 4x2 baggy for 204 from Toyota, gets from an agent a same baggy for 250,000 rand. So that's the kind of overexpenditure we're talking. It's itemized based. It's item based, not so from a total allocation, but from the items that they're buying within the business plan. So we clamp down on that, and then we demand quotation, and then we bring our own quotation to say, but we know, Toyota, if you have to buy this bike, it is what you can pay for it, not the amount that you do. Then, linked to that, it will be the question that was asked by the chair. I'll still go to other question to say now, what do you do once you come across these things? Do you just leave it, or there are consequences? And then the question here is that, okay, I'd also like to link to the question to say not all the strategic partners are bad. Some of them are good. So far, after we look at the contacts and then reached by the strategic partners, 7 of them, we put them under the red. I even have names. Like in Mpumalanga, there's 9 projects that were affected by a certain strategic partner called Estrada. In the Northern Cape, there were 7 affected under the strategic partner called Ibalemo. And in Northern Cape, again, there were 6 under Bloemfontein Alberton and 15 in Northwest under the same organization. There's one very difficult matter under the Mount Nebo in Northwest, where a number of projects were also suspended, and then the termination of the contract was done, and then we sent this to Legal to come up with the corrective measures and recoup the monies that were spent or were not accounted by these strategic partners. So we do that. Who assists us in this, which talks to where do we monitor these projects or do we follow the money where they're spending? We have appointed what we call the project management unit, we call it the PMU. It's done by auditors, Sekela, and KPMG. They are operating in all 9 provinces. They follow each and every thing that we pump into this farm and give us a quarterly report about what is happening. The interesting thing, they not only look into the strategic partner, they also look at the relationship with the beneficiary. And whether the beneficiary is on the farm or the beneficiary, after the strategic partner is implementing, you just go and do other businesses in Joburg and all the stuff. They give us those reports. I had an example in the last meeting about the 3-year review that was done in Bloemfontein by the minister and all the strategic partners and farmers, where the report was presented. People were told exactly how they performed, and then those that were in the red were asked to come up with corrective measures within the next 6 months. So we have systems in place, and we make sure that we analyze where it's necessary. I didn't catch Member November's question proper. My understanding was whether we have certain time frames. She was making an example with 6 months to say when the strategic partners will be getting the funds to implement. Yes, after looking at the business plan, we struggle sometimes to finalize the business plan because they will be contentious to say, no, this is not what we want, this is what we want, and then sometimes that delays the disbursements of funds. In some of the instances where it's a big group, one of the requirements is a community resolution. Without a community resolution, we cannot release funds because all the members who are involved, they must know exactly what is coming their way and what is going to be done. You will remember the debate around the CPAs, where you find only a few executive members are running the project, but the rest of the members doesn't know what's happening. So it's one of our requirements that there must be a community resolution. But if not everyone or the local government caught up in taking a community resolution, sorry, it affects the the disbursement of fund. And the question of we are currently addressing only 20% of the projects. If you go back, members, to our strategic plan, we look at the number of projects that we can do since 2009-10-11, and then we also allocate them into the 3-year cycle. So on average, we are doing 400 projects per annum. If you look at this result of 1,300, looking from 2009, you can see that we're currently overachieved. We are getting there. You can multiply 400 by a number of years, then you can see how far we're going to get to 4,800 to assist all funds. And remember, members, we never said all the projects are in the bad state. We said a certain percentage, which means there are some that are operating on their own. There are some that need little assistance, like fixing, for instance, like electricity, because they don't have money for electricity reconnections, where they are running irrigation schemes and so forth. So not all are bad. So some of them may not be counted yet because they are getting a little support, but they are operating on their own. Some of them, they are investors who bring their own money. So the 20% of our tier is those that are really bad, but the rest, some of them, maybe again another 3% is operating on their own. The last one, members, was around, I think it's merely the succession plan where the member appealed to say, can you look at NARISEC into this new firm? We've got a new lease policy that talks to succession plan, whereby we recognize that we need to prioritize, among others, the NARISEC youth. What we normally do, we don't give them a lease in most of the time. What we are saying is that when there's a person who's applied for a firm, we look at the potential of the productivity of that firm and say, can you please take so many NARISEC, especially those that are already on the system, have been trained, and then he or she mentors them and they with them. In some instances, we are creating a few number of firms that we are called training firms, where we're going to give this, we are going to place NARISEC under the supervision of the experienced farmers going forward. Yes, we are looking into that, members. It's basically a part of training NARISEC and also a succession plan in the process. Thanks, Chair. Hope I've answered all the questions.
Thank you very much. Mr. Okunrombi, Sunday Okunrombi.
Sorry.
Oh, a follow-up question for Mr. Mashang. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. President. My follow-up question is with regard to the strategic partner. I just want to find out as to whether is it relevant maybe to say these people are strategic partners, because in some cases these people are getting paid. They are actually not coming up with investment into those funds, but we keep on referring them as strategic partners. I'm not sure as whether the rationale behind calling them strategic partners, where is it coming from? Because in most cases, those strategic partners, they even take money from those people who were actually the beneficiaries. That's what we have seen when we were doing oversight. So I just want clarity pertaining to that. Thank you very much.
Mr. Matango, why do you refer to them as strategic partners?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think I remember it's spot on. When we conceptualized recruitment development, the intention was to get strategic partners. The definition of a strategic partner, not academic definition, the intention was to say you want a person who will meet the government or the beneficiaries halfway in terms of the investment. But what happened along the process, remember, unfortunately, the ideal didn't work. We find people who still behave like you, typical entrepreneurs, who wants to use government resources in order to implement. Actually, in most of the instances, they want profit even before they can realize the production. Because even if you don't put your own investment, but at least you need to wait for production, and then there can be profit sharing and all that. I think something that we need to consider to say, who are the strategic partners, who are the mentors, and then who are others, who are those who are not bringing money into the system, and you can't call them, you can't classify them as one and call them strategic partners. But if you look at the new recapitalization development policy, it talks of four categories. It's then strategic partners, hoping that will be bringing investment, and then it's mentors. And mentors is basically your neighboring experienced farmer who go from time to time and look at whether the beneficiaries are performing well and assist with the department on the intervention mechanism. then you've got core management, which is mainly applicable in the restitution, whereby you got tourism and others, where you can do away with the seller because of the business and the marketing that the people are looking into, and then you keep him, and then you create what is core management. And then others is contact management, which is mainly applied by retail shops like Woolworths, where they go and enter into a contract with the beneficiaries to say, you shall produce for us a specific product on specific volume, on a specific quality, and then they are contracted to Woolworths, and Woolworths will invest the money for them to do production. We've got categories, but we must also think about this one to say, these ones who doesn't bring anything into the system, why do we call them strategic partners? Maybe we'll be the ones who come up with a new way for it. Thanks.
So, the intention remains for them to be strategic partners, but the current does not match the intention. Okay, fine. Point taken. Mr. Ogurombi, Sunday Ogurombi.
Thank you, Chair. The first question relates to the capacity of rural municipalities and what we said in the legislation, that two or more municipalities may join together in creating structures for the implementation. The question was, why don't we ask districts to do it? Chairman, in terms of the Structures Act, which is the constitutional legislation for division and allocation of powers among types of municipalities, land development management rests with local municipalities, not districts. Right now, quite a number of districts are seeing the need to develop district social development frameworks, and we support them doing that. But what we're saying is that because the later part of applications management rests with local municipalities, what we have said in two of the sections in the legislation is that those locals must agree that that power be exercised by districts. So what it says is that why don't we ask districts to do it? It's simply because we cannot unless we amend that legislation that allocates power, but it is still possible for districts to do it if the locals agree. The funding for the training for SPLUMA implementation, our department has set aside some funds to support municipalities in getting ready to implement. In fact, the minister in the budget speech announced that we put up about 31 million aside for that. It may not be totally sufficient. I mean, it's not our intention to take over the funding of the municipalities that they're themselves responsible for. It is to kickstart them in terms of implementation. So we expect a joint funding. I think in the, I've almost answered the role of district. But district cannot do some of the things we're expected to do. Are all municipalities expected to have offices to implement SPLUMA? The answer is yes. All municipalities constitutionally are the ones responsible for rezoning. They are the only ones that can do land use schemes. In terms of the legislation, only where a municipality is unable or unwilling to do it, as we can then take to a province, which is in terms of Section 139, say you can step in, but it's the primary responsibility of municipalities, and we truly expect municipalities to indeed set up those structures. This is the agreement even that the operative governance MINMEC and even the few provincial MINMECs that we've attended, that we'd not get to ask for a review of that constitutional process. Municipalities selling land privately. From our side, we've actually attended a number of municipalities in doing a slightly different type of land audit. Land audits at municipalities, I think maybe before we move on to the audit of municipalities, I think it is generally known that many of our municipalities don't even know exactly what they own. I think the problem also stems from the fact that the classic definition of state land, that my colleagues will have referred to, in some instances has not included, when we talk about state land management at national level, it does not include land owned by municipalities themselves. So state land only refers to national and provincially owned land. The Government Immovable Asset Management Act regulates ownership of assets at national and provincial. It's only the MFMA that expects municipalities through some asset control. I'm well aware that the Human Settlement Amendment attempted to even say to municipalities, stop indiscriminately selling your land. The reality was that there was no legal instrument to actually tell municipalities to stop selling their land. And even when we do say they should stop selling it, I think the first process is what we are doing at the moment, to
even allow to support municipalities in knowing exactly what they own themselves as part of their asset management kind of thing. So I'm just saying that there's no direct legislation, but the first step is to ensure that as part of their special development framework, as part of their national stability analysis that is involved in the special development framework, they actually know what they themselves own and what that can be used for before they decide whether or not it is worth selling. Chairperson, I think in the course of transferring from one format to the other, I will have missed that Northern Cape. I'm pretty sure we were in Northern Cape. In fact, these are just the formal ones. There were many engagements we had across the country beyond the ones that we even listed here. We will continue to do that engagement as we speak. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Let it go up, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My follow-up is with that. I didn't hear it very very well in terms of the budget, because there are extensive programs that need to be actually done in terms of making sure that the act is being implemented. But I just want to find out, because these municipalities, we know they are struggling in terms of finances. So I just want to know the pledge from the department. How much are they going to give those people to make sure that they implement those acts in those municipalities where they are actually struggling? Because you are saying another fund will be coming from national, and another one is coming from maybe municipal. I just want to know the pressure from your side. Because if we are saying that act must be implemented, we must make sure that there is funding behind so that the act could be actually implemented, knowing that the struggling municipality on the ground. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, in terms of our budget for this financial year, we have set aside about 15 million rand for training and capacity support to municipalities, apart from some other policy and practical implementation projects that we're doing. We do not intend to give money to any municipality to do anything. What we intend to do is to fund some of the activities that will enable them to set up the institutions and to set up their processes. So, for instance, we are sending teams to municipalities, including service providers, that will help the municipality to gauge their system. We pay for that to advertise, to set up institutions, and we're looking at them bringing to us early next year so that we can look at possibly factoring into our next year's financial budget. But we cannot take over the arrangements. But we assume that this time now 31 million for this financial year, that's likely what we are going to spend to ensure they implement. But that money is not going to be transferred from our department to those municipalities. It is likely capacity support that we are doing. So we're funding some of those they need to do. If, for instance, they need to employ a person to do it, in some provinces we're working with the provinces like this, where we are both funding a care service center. In some of the areas we will pay if it requires us to pay some of those people to see some of those tribunals directly ourselves, but we do not intend to transfer money to municipalities. But roughly directly, 10 million or in the region will be spent to ensure they are ready over probably per year for the next 2-3 years. And hopefully they will now take over that function. In the template we sent them, we've also asked for their budget. And one of the things we said in Cox Amendment is that municipalities must reorganize their budgeting to fund it. People must pay for applications. If they lose their case, they must pay for it. We expect that they will be able to improve their revenue collection via proper land use management practices. We've seen in some municipalities, Chairperson, that some of these municipalities, they don't even collect rates from what they own. From, we're not talking about immediate persons. We're talking about a mall in the Bombella. Woodbank doesn't pay certain rates because it's not the evaluation role. And those are the kind of things we're saying that hopefully if we do for the next 2 years to support some of them, if indeed they are not able to do it, it's not our view that some expenses cannot do it. They may need to reorganize the employees they have to change their jobs. And those are the things we have in the assembly. Where it's needed, we will do limited support. But we do not want to assure that we will do everything they need to do. But we think we will do what is necessary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Can we get very briefly maybe the Ngonyama Trust? Mr. Bebe.
Chairperson. Honorable members, Deputy Minister, board members, the DG and the colleague. Chair, I'll respond to the question of surplus. We have, Chair, looked at the PFMA, Section
53-3, and we looked at the treasury regulations as the secretariat, and we felt that there is proof as what I can refer to probably as misinterpretation from us, and probable misinterpretation of what we hear from the other side. But we are preparing for a memo that we'll submit to the board to say there was a portfolio committee meeting and this was interpretation, and this was the interpretation of the secretariat in terms of these sections. And the next board meeting is scheduled for this Friday, and we hope the board will take a resolution on that. So what I can say at the moment is that I personally do not have a final decision on how to go about with the matter, but I'm tabled before the board.
Mr. Dube, you would recall that in that meeting where you made a presentation, where that matter of surplus was identified, the department admitted the fact that it is indeed not supposed to have happened the way it did. And the department said, in terms of regulations, they are supposed to authorize it, if you like, from the letter authorize it by the form of the letter. In other words, you have to indicate that there's a surplus, and they must then say, yes, we understand that, they must give reasons why they want to use it, can I use it for it, they authorize it. I think it's Mr. Machang who made that intervention. Am I right? Yes, I'll give chance to speak. So I'm just saying that was my understanding of the last meeting. So I would have expected a response that says, I have had interactions with the department on this particular subject, and this is what we have identified, and this is what we have agreed upon as a way forward. And as a result of that, this is what I'm taking to the board. So to the board, listen, we had a surplus in terms of the regulations. It's not supposed to happen like this. The board must take a resolution if it's required to do so in order to authorize what the department is saying must be done. That's an answer I was expecting from you. But before I take it further, let me give the DG an opportunity to comment on the matter.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, Deputy Minister, I think the honest response here is that since the discussion was had last week, we have not had the opportunity between the board and department, or secretariat, and the department to talk about this issue and the other issues. Honourable Chair would recall that there were other issues. For instance, in terms of the reports that they were supposed to give to the minister, the structures, the government structures, the board had set up for itself, where the board members and the executive, those were the issues that we were going to sit down to talk about that. And the chair had given us the responsibility of reporting back to the committee once we have had that discussion. Honourable Chair, all I can veto is for the Chair to grant us the time. We will certainly do it in the next 7 days to have that discussion so that we both give you the response that you asked of us. We have not had the opportunity to meet since last week.
In the next 7 days, you say?
Yes, sir.
Deputy Minister, you hear the DG says, the DG says, in the next 7 days, the committee will get a response in terms of the issue we raised last week in the meeting of the committee in relation to the surplus accumulated by Nkonyama Trust, which by law is not supposed to be. So I think we must regularize this matter as soon as possible. We are going to wait. 7 days will be next week, Wednesday. The meeting so agree. Thank you very much. Your plea is accepted.
but it only lasts until next Wednesday.
So is that all what you wanted to say, Mr.
That's true, Chair. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much, colleagues and the department and the Ngwanyama Trust. Let me say that the purpose of this really was to, you remember that the previous inputs by the department focused heavily on the whole question of the administration issues, the financial performance, and so on. So we really wanted to use this exercise to get more information on matters which relate almost service delivery. I think they have given us the information that we believe that is very useful. And the purpose of which will be to complete the report that the National Assembly needs, which talks about what is called this BRRR, budget review recommendation and report. There is a requirement that by October all the committees must perform this function in terms of how the department, you know, respond to the challenges that arise out of the report that you give to the committees. So we are going to do that and make sure that we provide that report to the National Assembly. Of course, the report will contain the successes that the department recorded and the challenges that the department is still facing and how the department intends dealing with the challenges that it is recording. By the way, our purpose of the committee is not to destroy the department. It is to help the department to perform its mandate of ensuring that it provides a service that it's supposed to provide in terms of the mandate and delegation given to it by the president. Remember, all the departments are performing their functions on behalf of the president. All the powers of this department are the powers of the president. But the president, because of his good heart, you know, delegate this authority to the department to perform these functions. So our role is to make sure that they perform these functions according to how they're expected to perform them. So we are therefore saying we want to thank the department, we want to thank Ngwanyama Trust, and saying that the process of engagement, the process of oversight will continue, and appreciate the commitment that they always demonstrate when they are expected to appear before this committee. Before I leave the department, we want us to remain at the committee for a few minutes. I want to give the 15 minutes an opportunity to say a word or two. This is what the National Assembly.
Chair, thank you very much for this time. I hope that the responses by the department be very useful and assist the members of parliament. And you once said in a meeting that the land is supposed to be uniting us, not dividing us. So we want to make sure that it is really going to unite us, let us of the land. Comments made by Honorable Kaba, it is a pity that he is not here, that the department is doing very well. Those compliments, Chair, are strengthening the department. We do want such compliments, Chair, because we want to see that really we do the right thing for members of parliament. Lastly, Chair, I appreciate your polite way of dealing with issues, more especially with Ngwanyama Trust, Chair, that we will make a follow-up, and within 7 days, I've listened to what you are telling us, that within 7 days, we will make contact with some help to you, Chair. Thank you very much for your time and the member time.
In terms of your last comment, I really wish that
the king was here to hear those requests. But you see, colleagues, let me say this. You know, when you talk about land as a uniting factor, you know, I wish the day can come when those who are having land, I don't want to talk about how they got that land, but those who are having land can realize that to share that land with those who don't have, is an honorable thing to do. It's just a dream that even Martin Luther King once had. I'm having a dream that one day they can realize that that land that they have in abundance, when others are really yearning for land, they can realize that to unify this country, they can come and say, listen, out of these 1,000 hectares that I have, I'm prepared to give away this allowance for my fellow compatriots, also to make a living. And then we can be able to sit there and say to ourselves, how best can we make sure that we, all of us, as we let that grant, use this land for the economic growth of our country, as opposed to saying, I need more land, I don't have land. But that is just a dream. But sometimes it's good to dream, because dreams sometimes do come true. And I hope that one day, I don't want to provoke Mr. Mandela. I'm just making this general statement out of the what the deputy minister said. I want to give you just a few minutes to comment. A minute to comment.
Just the second, Chairperson. In our lifetime. That's all I want to add. In our lifetime.
Thank you very much. I want to relieve the department at Gwanyama and say thank you very much for attending. Arriva, thank you, Mr. Masango, Mr. Mufreling, Mr. Sunday, and others. Thank you very much.
Thank you.